honourable members, I think ready to start proceedings. A few minutes late, we were sitting down 1:30 on the previous of the information regulator earlier. This is our third session for the day. So far, so good. We're very happy to see Legal Aid SA. So welcome to the delegation, Ms. Guido. I'm chairing this proceeding for this week. Our chairperson is an apology for me. We said we may know it, which I see this whole. We also have an apology from Honorable Senator Breitenbach, who's also at the JC this week. And then we have one member who's abroad, Ms. Wilma Drachen, who could not be here. And there's an apology from the SWAT from the ACP, who also must be here today, if you didn't hear. But we are six members here, including South Britain, so we're happy to receive you to present your annual performance report. But I'm sure you would perhaps start off by introducing the delegation to us. Those who are leading and those who are in transition and those who are present or having come and joined us today. So very welcome to you. But let me leave it to you to introduce yourselves. I think some of you may not be familiar with the committee members. You have been here before. But perhaps we should just for completion's sake, as we start in the sixth term, introduce ourselves as the members. So if members can just start to introduce themselves. My name is Hisham Mohammed. We'll go to Ms. Jelly. If you can just introduce.
My name is Mohammed. I'm a support JC for the member of the committee representing ANC. Thank you, Chair.
I'm Tulvari Mwaram, member of this committee representing the EFF.
Good afternoon, Werner Horn representing the DI.
Tingutola Nola, Lilungu Le Committee on Justice and Correctional Services, the Mele African National Congress.
Richard Yanji, member of the committee.
Thank you very much. All right, you can proceed.
Thank you, sir. The members of the committee, we were here in September and introduced ourselves, but at that time the committee was much more thicker than what it is, but however we accept that there are some issues that they've demanded. And on my right hand side, I have Mr. Tessie Grunermatt, who is the Chief Legal Executive at the National Office, who is in charge of the civil matters in the legal aid. My name is Mr. Maimakube. I'm the chairperson of court. I'm the sitting judge, the South African High Court in Johannesburg. I've been chairperson since March this year when Justice Lambert left office after 17 years. On my left is Ms. Vido Belaramka, the current CEO, who's of the committee, of the board, of Legal Aid South Africa. She will be stepping down as CEO at the end of this month. And next to her is Ms. Mandy Tukola, who will be taking over from her on the 1st of November this year. So as you hear, she's in the process of taking over from Mr. Alanka, whose contract has expired. The next one is Mr. Dr. Jerry Mapokoni, our current COO, and then followed by a new board member, Professor Kumebe. I did not see Rebecca, our CFO. CFO now, Sabatau, Rebecca Sabatau. And then next one is Professor Kunede, who is a new board member for this year. And then Mr. Lahalski Tomichari, who is also a board member from KZN, representing the Community Advanced Offices. And then we have Mr. Hope Bambiso, who is the provincial executive of Legal Aid South Africa in Eastern Cape, the whole of the Eastern Cape. And then next to him is Advocate Brian Nair, who is a national operations executive, who looks after all the criminal spread of criminal offices and the processes in the whole country and on top. So, and behind I have Vanessa, who is our communications officer. And then Noma Wetu is our, she's in the Eflin office. And then we have Ms. Nolita Tali, who is the provincial executive, Western Cape. She's based out in Stellenbosch. And then we have our board secretary, the person who makes sure that we coordinate all of the board secretary, Mr. Langa, Ditiba Langa. That's the full content of what we have. Some board members will not make it. We always try and see everybody's
there. No, thank you very much, Chad. It's always good to know, especially new members in particular, to have the delegations here today so that we can communicate more effectively and know who's responsible for what areas of the performance in particular. But thank you. You may proceed, Chad.
Thank you very much, members of the committee. Legal Aid South Africa has basically we are here, Chairperson and board members, to present the fourth year implementation of our threat plan, which is coming to an end in March next year. We can safely and proudly say that for the past four and a half years now, we've managed to meet 90% of targets that we set for ourselves in our threat plan. We are in the process of finalizing our next 5 year threat plan, which will see us from 2020 up to 2025, just in time before I step down as chairperson. We have, in the past 5 years, probably so, delivered on our constitutional legislative mandate. We've increased access to justice through legal assistance and advice centers that we have spread out throughout our offices. We do have a very effective call-in center, which also makes us that we meet our targets. We obviously have to operate within the budget that is allocated to us by government, that you hear more about the problems that we experienced this year. The act under which we operate was passed in 2014. You will recall, Chair, that we were operating under the 1969 Act, which came to, we had to revise. The new Act became fully operational since 1 March 2015, and it brought about certain changes in the management in the board setup. Previously, we did not have a position of deputy chairperson. We now have a deputy chairperson, but he could not be here. So we are certain the board is fully constituted. This board, together with management, recognizes a number of issues. There's a separation, a clear separation of powers between us as a board and management. There is no interference. That is the reason why this organization has been performing very well, because board members are not there to tell management what to do. But board members are there to guide and say policies are following, and we're proud to say that management has not been on a single day defied board directives. At all times, issues are debated carefully. We in our deliberations and how we run the organization, Chair, we are guided by a number of tools, governance tools. One of them is the PFMA, the King 4 prescripts, as well as our own regulations and boards, including our board charter, which guides us as a board what is it that we can do or cannot do. We hold our meetings, board has had 5 meetings, and our committee meetings are held regularly. The present board that is in existence now was elected in, appointed in the 1st of March this year, after the expiry of the period of the board that took place, that started on the 1st of March 2015. We, on a regular basis, evaluate our performance, and 2018 and 2019 financial year, we culminated in us handing over to the incoming board, which the document was handed over to the minister early this year. We are proud to say that we not only rate ourselves very highly, but we have internal structures that make sure that we don't overrate ourselves. We do everything in ourselves to say how we feel on track, how we do the right thing, and that is how we do it. Chair, thank you very much. I'll be giving over to other members of the board to take you through our annual reports.
Thank you, Judge.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and members of the committee. Today we're presenting our annual report, as you know, and I'm just going to talk to a few performance highlights before members of the team, the executive team, will take you through the different sections of the annual report. Overall, and I think the first few slides talk to that, overall as legal aid, we have maintained high performance as we have done over the past few years. And we have delivered against our business plan, so we are happy to report that that has been achieved. In terms of legal assistance, as you can see on the slide, that in this year, in the year under review, rather, which is the year 2018-19, we assisted over 700,000 persons, and that was in terms of legal matters and advice matters, as well as impact litigation matters. So the legal matters were 416,000, of which 87% were criminal legal aid matters and 13% were civil legal aid matters, and then over 300,000 advice matters. In terms of the children that are assisted, which is part of that number, the earlier number, but just to indicate the actual children, we have 16,000 children, matters involving children, 59% of that was criminal and about 40% civil. When we say criminal, it means children who are in conflict with the law. Then we maintained our mixed delivery system model, where we have the bulk of the services that we offer is done through our in-house salaried legal practitioners. As you can see, that's 96% rather, that done through our legal aid local offices, as well as our duty care partners who are private lawyers. That's about 3% of the work is done through them. And then we also have cooperation partners as other NGOs, legal aid clinics, that we work with, and as well as agency agreements, where it's 1%. We track our case backlogs, and we maintain the matters we are doing within that, except in the regional court, in the high court in this year, where they exceeded the target we had set, and there would be various reasons for that. A lot of this also will get covered in the details, so I'm just giving you a high-level summary. In the year, we also had our legal aid regulations and manual approved and gazetted. We did an independent assessment of, we maintain an independent assessment of quality, which means independent of management. We have a separate team that manages and tracks our quality, and we're happy that our legal practitioners are meeting our quality standards. And where they don't meet them, then we provide support to them and assist them to improve themselves. The quality assurance programs extended to the work of Judy Care, which was important because Judy Care practitioners are also, they are private practitioners, so we don't have any oversight of them, but now we've included them in terms of our quality assessment to ensure that the quality that they give our clients is also meeting the standards. And we're also going to continue to work with them to ensure that they understand what is required. Overall, court stakeholders are happy with the work that has been done, and that in terms of the impact matters also, we're achieving success and we're doing more and more matters, and you would have heard of various matters we've been involved in, and when there's a report on it, you'll hear more. And also importantly, as legal aid, as we said previously, we believe that we are only as successful as the criminal justice system is, so we work closely with our criminal justice system stakeholders, as well as the civil justice system generally, the justice system stakeholders, to ensure that we make the system work as well. As far as our support functions are concerned, also we are on track, our finances are on track. We had our 18th unqualified audit, which is good news. It's in clean audit. I think that the Auditor General's office, the Auditor General briefed you on this, and you would have seen that we had improvements in terms of some of the areas that they look at. As far as the other metrics of finances are concerned, they are also on track, whether it's payment within payment of our duty care practitioners or our creditors. Where we are a bit below is in terms of where we've had challenges in terms of submissions during periods when at the year end we have a closure, or because we were making a transition across two IT systems. Unauthorized, irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure reduced, but we still have it as a concern, and I think it's one of the issues I saw was raised in the Auditor General's report. And one of the two main reasons that is causing this to remain in the way it has, other than where there are human errors and we are tracking those of staff, is that the issue relating to the sheriffs, and we are obliged to use sheriffs in the work that we do, and they're not having tax clearance. They're not registered on CSD. And then the second one relating to landlords, where in many remote areas when we are obliged to use the premises because there's nothing else available, or if we were in premises and landlords, then after that become they are not tax compliant, then that becomes part of the irregular expenditure. So some of those things we are tracking, we then are trying to reduce, but some of it is beyond our control, as we said. Then as far as internal audit is concerned, you know that internal audit is an important part of legal aid, and it's part of our success because they are an important business partner where they provide a second level assurance to ensure that the work that we are doing is in compliance of what we have to, so that when the Auditor General, the third level, comes in, then we are on track. Other than that, we maintain the other aspects of sound financial management. Because of the fact that the bulk of the work we do is provided by our own legal practitioners, and we have, you'll see the numbers, the staff numbers, etc., and 80% of our staff are either legal practitioners or paralegals, that we have to have a big focus on people-related programs and ensure that the people that work at Legal Aid are happy and therefore can provide a service that's of high quality. And therefore, you'll see that we focus always on people, and our people-related programs, we also benchmark, and this is the 10th year in 2018-19 that we have been accredited as one of the top employers in South Africa. And we've just heard now that this is now the new year, but that for the 11th year we also been accredited. What that helps us to do is it helps us to benchmark against best practices in human resources and ensure that we stay up to standard and that our policies and our practices are relevant. And in terms of recruitment, we maintain high recruitment levels in this financial year that is under review. It was a bit below target, and the main reason for that is that it's also 2018-19, it's also a year when we were managing big budget cuts, as you'll see in terms of the numbers that are presented by the CFO. And with that, it was a challenge to try and ensure that we keep the recruitment and we freeze some posts, and then we were looking ahead at the years that were to come where we had further budget cuts. And so that created a bit of a challenge for us, which then meant that our recruitment was at 93% instead of 95%. And once we have certainty, and I think that it's unlikely we're going to have certainty in the near future. We're still waiting to see if we have further budget cuts. But when there's more certainty, it's easier to manage that kind of stuff. And but we maintained our low turnover rate, which is below 6%, which is also good news. It means that we recruit and retain staff, which is why we can manage the quality and the performance that we do. And our leadership programs are also on track. In addition, we also work with communications and our community outreach programs through both our legal practitioners, where we're providing mobile legal aid assistance in the form of clinics or points at which we assist clients in the public, and also community outreach from a communications point of view, where we are reaching out and making our services known so that people know where to reach us. We have improved and intensified our presence on social media so that also the public can get to know us, and especially on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Our external website has been revamped, and so it's also, we're pleased to say that, and I think it's the last time we came, one of the members asked us about the issues of audio functionality, etc. We've improved on all of those issues as well. Our IT platform, the last time we talked to you, we said that we were in the process of setting up a new electronic legal aid administration system, and we're pleased to say that we are, just as we speak in this week, we've shut down the old system and we are migrating our data, and at the end of this week, which is tomorrow, we'll go fully live on the new system, which means that we are satisfied that we've addressed the things, and that after that it will be about bedding down that system. But we are excited about that, and all our staff have been trained and are all now on board on that. And then sustainability reporting also remains an important part of our work, and we have, as you know, a sustainability strategy against which we report, and even our annual report is an integrated annual report in which sustainability is a big focus. And lastly, that in addition, we link to the global sustainability development goals, which talks to especially the issue of access to justice. And so we are also trying to see how we can contribute towards that. So that's a high-level summary. And then the next section deals with the actual programs in our annual performance plan, and the executives will take you through those. We will not do every slide so that we can cover as much as we can, but we'll respond to the questions because it's before you, and also as well as the annual report is before you. So thank you, Chairperson. I'll just hand over now to Brian.
Sure. Thank you,
Chairperson. Good afternoon to all. I'm starting at slide number 13, which deals with legal aid in criminal matters. The specific program is to deliver quality criminal legal services that are client-focused and within budget constraints. And as you see, our target deals with our coverage of courts and the percentage coverage. And you'll note that we have met our target for both district and regional court. We just made it, and that's for noting our reduction in numbers primarily because of budget shortfalls and cuts. And the high courts, we continue to provide legal aid at all courts. The next slide, Vidu has covered in the actual numbers of matters that were done. Criminal legal aid was 362,000, which constitutes about 87% of our work. And you'll find the court coverage is exactly as I just described. The matters in terms of criminal legal work is largely concentrated in our district courts, where 85% of our work is done. But in the regional court, it's 14, and the high courts is 1. We'll look later where the numbers are actually displayed. In the FCA, we had 11 criminal matters where appeals were heard, and 6 of them were successful. And in terms of the pending matters, you would note that in the district court, we are largely within our target. 10.5% was exceeding 6 months, whereas in the regional court and the high court, we regrettably were above the targets for various reasons. Regional court, the target is 25, and we were 33.4, whilst in the high court, it's a 1.9% variation. Moving on to slide 15, this gives you a distribution of the categories of work that is done in the criminal courts across the various court types. and you'd find aggressive crimes are the ones that are largely prosecuted across all court types, followed thereafter by economic crimes. Narcotic crimes, drug-related charges, for instance, are largely in the district court, whilst the bulk of sexual offences in the regional courts. Moving to slide 16, Chair, the pending matters, and this gives you a breakdown by court type, and you'd find that at the end of the financial year, there was 175,000 matters that were pending. 52,000 of them were civil, so the other 123,000 were criminal. And the numbers of matters that are backlogged in the last three columns are reflected, together with the percentages backlog. A lot of work is taking place in ensuring that we reduce those backlog matters, especially in the regional and high courts. Moving to slide 17, the item one we have covered. Item two, there is our footprint, and you've noticed that the number of officers have remained largely the same. Recruitment levels have been low for the year at 92. It's much lower than what we normally used to, but the CEO has explained that we have to limit recruitment because of a budget cut that was threatened. And we also have a good duty care program. We have a number of private practitioners who are accredited with us, and you can see there's 1,234, and that program is proceeding smoothly. We have a mixed model delivery, but the bulk of our matters are done by our local offices, that's 96%. Duty care constitutes about 3%, and cooperation 1%. We closed almost as much as we opened during the financial year. It was only a 6,000 difference. That's 410,000 matters were closed or finalized, and the clearance rate was 0.99. If we move to the next slide, this gives you a view of the performance in terms of new matters over the last three financial periods. And you'll note that although the percentage split between civil and criminal was exactly the same, 87% and 13%, you'll note that the number of matters have actually reduced year upon year, especially in the criminal courts, from 385 in the 16-17 year to 362. And it's a trend that other stakeholders have similarly reported, and we think that the drop in numbers can largely be attributed to the items listed in the three bullets. That's screening, increased numbers about the NPA in terms of the informal mediation program, as well as the reality that there's a decrease in the number of cases that are coming through the court process. With regard to civil matters, there's also a decrease of about approximately 5,000 over the three-year period. And this is largely due to freezing of posts to accommodate budget capacity. So there's only that much of matters we can do in civil because of limited capacity, and with decreased capacity, then the numbers drop. Moving to the next slide in terms of the presentation, new legal matters by delivery systems. So you get a feel here of the breakdown of work done through our various delivery partners. Local office, as I said, constitute over 96% of the work, and duty care, cooperation, and agency partners are reflected. Chair, I'll hand you over to Mr. Bambiso, who will take you through the next two slides.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. The delivery of quality legal services remains our main priority. We have a number of programs in place in order to ensure that our clients receive quality legal services. The supervisory ratios at our local offices are monitored constantly, and we have training programs that we have implemented, and all those training targets have been achieved by our practitioners. And we also have some support programs in the form of mentoring and coaching programs that we give to our practitioners. And our provincial offices also provide support in respect of identified quality deficiencies. And overall, we have an independent unit which is based at our internal audit department, which provides support for quality. And for the financial year, we have less than 1% of our legal practitioners who did not meet those quality targets. And that percentage, Chair, it is given support by legal managers so that their quality can improve. Legally, South Africa, Chair, if you go to slide 21, you will note that we also have a responsibility to see to it that we contribute to the effective functioning of the justice and legal sector. In that regard, Chair, what we do, we participate and influence structures that are aimed at improving the functioning of the court and justice system. To this end, Chair, we participate in the national and provincial efficiency enhancement structures. I'm talking about the NEEC, I'm talking about the PEEC, and during the financial year, Chair, there was one NEEC meeting which we participated in, and a total of 36 PEEC meetings where we were dealing with the effective functioning of the justice system. Chair, I will hand over to my colleague, Patrick Gandemark.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. I will deal with the civil aspects in terms of legal aid services delivery. Our first program obviously deals with providing legal representation in civil matters. And you can see in terms of our targets and our delivery that we achieved the targets. So we have a total of 53,990 new civil matters that was taken on. It's 2.6% less than in the previous financial year. As Brian mentioned, there were some. We did hold back on the recruitment when we had the budget cut so that we wouldn't have to affect warm bodies. And when that was reversed, we started recruiting. But in essence, we had between 3.8 and 3.4% less staff than in the previous financial year. Local officers took on 88.5% of those matters, which is 9% than our matter targets for internal. 2.7% of civil matters were allocated to private practitioners via our duty care system, and then 8.8% of our civil matters were done by cooperation partners, which is in line with the budget allocation that we give to them, and that's mostly your university law clinics. In the labour court instance, it's also that we have an agreement with SAS Law to provide assistance at the labour courts. If we look at specifically representation of vulnerable groups in civil legal matters, children composed 18% of those that we assisted, women was 58%, mental health care users 0.2%, the elderly 15.7%, and we assisted in the land and eviction matters on 11.8% of the matters that we did. We achieved an 89.4% success rate in our impact matters and continued to protect the rights of vulnerable groups. Specifically here, we can mention that over 12 years, we've funded the silicosis matter, firstly the first Blom matter, which was settled, and then the class action itself, that we were funding LRC over a period of about 12 years in both those matters. In terms of civil matters, we set a target of about a turnaround time of 18 months in civil matters, and at least 30% may exceed the target, depending on the specific issues in a matter, but we were below the target in terms of those exceeding turnaround times. As mentioned, we exceeded our targets internally by about 9% in terms of what our capacity permits. And then we also increased the use of our system called Hot Docs. We generated about 57,000 documents using this system, which is an increase of 200% from the 2017-18 financial year in which we introduced this. If you have a look, that's the breakdown overall in terms of matters done in our civil matters, excluding our co-ops. So you will see 45% links to family, which would include divorces. Children was 18%. Land matters, which links to title deed disputes and or evictions. And specifically, a lot of those would link to estates on behalf of children, where we seek to ensure that their rights are protected to property that's within the estate. And then civil claims, general applications, and that makes up the total of the 49,000 matters. You'll see the breakdown mostly in the magistrates' courts, which would include the regional courts, and then about 2,000 in the high courts, which includes the estates for minor children. For children, as we said, we provided assistance in just over 16,000 matters, which those figures were mentioned previously. In regard to children, we assisted about 3,984 in preliminary inquiries in criminal matters where they were in conflict with the law. Children awaiting trial in custody of
Child Justice Act.
That's in terms of the Child Justice Act.
That's correct, Chair.
Children awaiting trial are also checked to ensure speedy resolution of their matters. As at the end of March 2019, there were 15 children awaiting trial in custody for a period greater than 1 month. So we've got a dedicated program to ensure we track any children that are within the criminal justice system and are held in custody. There was a 6.5% decrease in new children's criminal matters, which is a good indication for us. And as you will see in the next slide, there's also been increases on the civil side. So our continued partnerships with stakeholders involved in child justice is to ensure that the objectives of the Child Justice Act are met. Assistance to children in civil matters increased by 7.7% when compared to 2017-18. 3,675 children civil matters related to estates involving children. So these would be children where they are orphaned, and then we assist to administer the estate, bring in the property to make sure that their rights to the property are protected, and also any monies we collect is then to then pay it over to the Guardians Fund that will then administer it for the benefit of those children, and the Guardians are then able to access those funds from the Guardians Fund. If we have a look, this is just then the reflection of over the last three financial years, the numbers of criminal and civil matters. As you will see, over the period, there's been a shift really from assistance in criminal defence to assistance in civil matters for children. And move on to the next slide, slide 28, which then deals with our legal advice matters. So we provided general advice services at all our offices, as well as via our call centre. And this time, via those mechanisms, we provided assistance to just over 308,000 clients at those offices. Although the legal aid line and remanded detainees and sentenced prisoners, we increased there. There was just an overall increase in this from the previous financial year of about 0.9% of our general advice, but that was mostly via the call centre and our services to remand detainees and sentenced inmates. If we move across, as you can see, this is also then just looking at our general advice across the local offices, our advice line, and our paralegals to persons detained in our prisons. And you will see we've increased from the 2017-18 financial year again by about 0.9%, as I mentioned earlier. I must maybe mention, with the last time we were here in regard to the advice, one of the questions one of the committee members had is, how do we provide for persons that have hearing difficulties, and how would they be able to communicate with us? I can say we've adapted on our website where there's a form to say, please make contact with me, for anyone to tick to say that they would prefer to communicate with us via email because of their hearing difficulties. And in that way, now we've opened up and ensured that via the web page we're able to communicate with them in writing via email to address the concern raised by the member at the last meeting that we had. If we move on to impact services, once again, in the last financial year, we funded and took on 30 new impact litigation matters that were approved. We had an 89.4% success rate achieved in the 19 matters that were finalised with an outcome. Most significant, as I mentioned earlier, was the silicosis. In this financial year, we also did the payouts in the life as a domain matter. We administered and made sure that the monies were then paid across to the survivors and their families. If we move on now in terms of accounting to the executive authority, and specifically in terms of our boards, so we do report quarterly against our annual performance plan, and this was done in all four quarters, and these were all submitted within the required time frames to the executive authority, being our Minister of Justice and Correctional Services. That's why we're here. The integrated report has been submitted to Parliament and National Treasury, as well as the Auditor General, by 31 August. And then In that financial year, we did have two briefing sessions with the committee. I hand over to my colleague, CFO, Rebecca Klubbertal. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairperson. Good afternoon, honorable members. Okay, I will take you through the financial planning and financial reporting, including sustainability. For the period under review, we prepared the MTF 2019-20 to 2021-22, which was approved by the board and submitted to National Treasury and the Department of Justice timely. We also prepared and presented the 2019-2020 budget that was approved by the board before the commencement of the financial year. Financial statements were also prepared and submitted to the Auditor General and National Treasury timely. No material adjustments were made giving effect to the audit report. In doing that, we maintained good cash flow financial management despite the grant reduction of 92 million. We know the main source of our revenue is the government grant. For that year, it was 1.7 billion. This was after the reduction of the 92 million. We maintained healthy financial ratios and cash ratio, which were above the norm. So our liquidity remained at a ratio of 1.2:1, where we able to pay our liabilities as and when they become due. Strong financial planning and expenditure was maintained, resulting in 98% of the budgeting spent and committed. We usually spend and commit slightly above this 98, usually in the region of 99. However, due to stringent budget expenditure measures that were implemented and also the fear of not wanting to overspend, we were very conservative in spending the budget, which resulted in other effects, such as the lower recruitment rate. Our supply chain management policy was reviewed and aligned with updated National Treasury SCM regulations as and when there were big issues. We had functional and effective bid adjudication committees throughout the financial year. For duty care practitioners, we paid 97.7% and 99.3% respectively within 30 days. The remaining could not be paid timely. As explained earlier, we have a December closure where some invoices were submitted just before the December closure. However, the time continued to run, resulting in some invoices paid after 30 days. We also had some practitioners not submitting all the required documents to enable payment, and that delayed the process. Unauthorized revenue expenses with the expenditure, it increased from 38 incidences. It reduced in value, however, in the number of incidences, it increased as indicated earlier, from 38 to 529. The 490, 93% of these relate to shelves where they were not registered with the CSC. However, we had to continue using them in order to ensure that our clients continue to receive legal services, otherwise we will receive some injustice and delays in the delivery of quality legal services. It should be noted that the sheriffs are appointed by the minister, and you know, we don't have any much influence or role in that. Okay, we received an unqualified audit opinion for the 18th year in succession, which is also a clean audit. In the management report, the Auditor General raised four findings. Three of them were other important matters, and one was an administrative matter. All these were subsequently addressed and implemented. The AGSA indicated that legally SA maintains the best practice of required preventative or detective all dimensions as outlined, those including leadership, financial performance, financial reporting, governance, and the risk area. So the AG will tackle all those areas. Moving on to expenditure for the year under review. Overall, indicated we spend 98% of our budget. In areas where it was 92% budget in office and in CAPEX, those who have been where goods were ordered subsequent, I mean close to year end and were delivered subsequent to year end. Included funds that were committed for our e-life system, electronic legal aid administrative system, which will be finalized in this or launched in this current financial year. Okay, just a high level summary of the statement of financial position on slide 37. Okay, overall, our total assets increased from 506 million to 529 million. The non-current assets, that's our property, plant and equipment, our fixed assets, those reduced from 203 million to 192 million. This was after taking into account the depreciation. And less assets were replaced due to budget constraints. And the current assets increased from 302 to 336 million. That includes, as we're being conservative, less funds were expenses and increase in the bank balance. In terms of current liabilities, they remain fairly the same year on year, and current liabilities also went down as we again they're being conservative. Okay, the accumulated surplus, this is the net worth after taking into account the current assets and the current liabilities, that's the work of the organization as at the time. Again, it grew because of the increase in cash and cash reserves and the end of surplus as indicated in the next slide. Okay, having received a revenue of 1.8 million, that includes the investment income, the interest, hence it got rounded up to 1.8 million. We then paid our direct expenditure, that includes all expenditure, our salary costs, which take 80% of our budget, direct costs, that includes duty care, impact, and other operating expenditure. We then had a surplus of that 37 million. In the previous year, we had a deficit of 2.8 as we had to draw from, again, cash reserves. Okay, the surplus is not extra money or extra cash. It should be noted that this is, it includes the expenditure and depreciation, which is an ancestral item. Okay, moving on to the cash flow. In terms of the cash flow, we had an increase in cash and cash reserves of 26 million, and which then increased our total cash and cash reserves to 261 million. And this was having been more conservative and not wanting to overspend in the light of the budget cut. Here then the next slide, just showing the original budget and the final budget where we had against actual, where additional funds, including those from the IJS, were allocated during the financial year. But overall, 98% of the budget was spent in expenditure.
Thank you. to the chairperson and the members of the committee. Starting with the slide number 41, the focus that we will be paying attention on, firstly, is on governance, having given the performance of the organization, both on legal and finance side up to this far. In terms of the strategy that which we are focusing on is enhancing good governance, and in particular looking at the tools that are important to guide the governance processes, be the PFMA, and we have adopted the King IV Code of Corporate Governance. So, and also we are making sure that we comply to other statutory requirements as we go through application of business operations. And the expectation that has been with us was, in terms of our monthly statutory compliance and deadlines, we have been following through on that, and among other issues is monitoring legislative compliance as it were to be. We have quarterly updates on compliance and provisions as it were to be. We also account, as it has been indicated, to board and also to the minister in as far as performance has been concerned. 6 monthly updated legislative universe reports is a sense of giving us as to whether we are still on course, if there are any new legislation that has come into existence, then we are able to know and see that we have properly updated. And the target has been that at least we should be 100% compliant. For this financial year, we have been 98% compliant as it were to be. And among other issues that has already been indicated, the critical word here has been the issue about the supply chain related aspect, which has been an issue of a focus for us to try to improve on it. Slide number 42. While we deal with governance, one key element is to provide for assurance of delivery, integrity, and accountability of information to authorities in all respective areas. We have adopted the King IV Code of Good Practice as far as combined assurance is concerned, and we have 4 levels. That starts with management at the forefront of ensuring that information that is provided is of satisfactory and correct in terms of fact and content, and our chief risk officer then provides and coordinates any other issue that he could observe of in relation to adherence to probable or targeted areas of risk management, and internal audit then comes after at the 3rd level of assurance. External auditor then conclude before it, what could also be a look at it. And in this respect, we can indicate that although our target has been at above 95% in terms of audit coverage plan, which is primarily managed by the internal audit area of the 3rd level of combined assurance, they've been able to deliver up to 99% in terms of the coverage plan. And in that, what has been important, as we have highlighted, is good planning in advance, being proactive, and also being having cooperation from management in as far as responding to identify findings from the internal audit side. Slide 43. Herein, one can indicate to say that it has, since out of all the project that has been looked into, which is about 99% of the project, of which then they have an additional of 6% of the projects which come during the course of the year, the internal audit has shown a satisfaction of effective controls of systems by management in particular. Another important aspect is that our internal audit also conduct forensic audits during the course of the year, as well as fraud awareness workshops. And in this case, they are all along the lines of the coverage plan for the year. And for fraud awareness workshops, they've been able to cover about 8 local offices across our 6 provinces, and they were able to cover 5 thereof. Our legal quality assurance unit also falls within the internal audit because it's independent of our business operations from the side of legal criminal work and the civil side thereof, and they cover both the matters that would involve civil criminal and also the work that is done by paralegals and that which come through our call center agents. And in this respect, we continue to grow on covering judicare practitioners, in particular to take observation of how they represent our clients and at the same time how they would then be able to record proceedings of cases that they have been defended. And at the end of the day, by the end of the financial year, we have been able, from the legal quantity of assurance unit, to cover about 99.7%, with a marginal difference of 0.13% less compared to the past financial year, slide 44. The risk management area, as I've already indicated, we have the chief risk officer, who is the second assurance provider for the organization, and he coordinates risk in focus. In particular for us is about our top risks for the organizations, for the organization that looks for strategic risk, for operational risk, as well as fraud risk. And in that, the enterprise risk management strategy and plan which we have assist us in evaluating both the risk opportunities and also monitoring tolerance levels of risk as we continue through the business. And in this case, we can indicate to say that the board has been much more focused on ensuring that management live up to the targeted parameters that have been set, in particular on risk tolerances, while at the same time they monitor how we manage the risk appetite of targeted risk for the organization. And for that very matter, in reporting to board, we have been able ultimately, even quarterly, to indicate that as and when we report, all the performances of the organization are lived within the risk parameters that have been set. Slide number 45, 46. We're going to look now in terms of the internal business processes and minor issues that we could highlight. Firstly, in terms of our regulatory framework, slide 46, the intention for this area was to make sure that at least we maintain regulatory framework and incorporating best practice aligned to constitutional values. For the last period, the focus was to look into the Legal Aid Act as to whether there would be a need for any other review, legal aid regulation in terms of whether we can make any adjustment and the legal aid manual. And as already reported, in the last financial year, which ultimately we had a gazette, government gazette, to review our means test, and that was implemented and brought into operation on the 29th of March 2019, which in essence falls outside this reporting period, but it gives us highlight to say that has been on course. Again on that, of course, the interest of it was to look in terms of our legal aid manual on the review of judicate tariffs, because we would normally look at the cost of living and make sure that it is in adjusting our tariffs for judicate practitioners, we can accommodate it with due consideration also of our budget allocation and what we can afford. That was slide 46. Slide 47, as far as financial management is concerned, and with much focus on the supply chain management, we would indicate to say that we continue to ensure that we live within compliance of the triple PFA and PFMA and regulations of the National Treasury, and our target always is to ensure that we are at 100% compliant. In this past period, one of the challenges that already been indicated was to manage irregular expenditure, and as already indicated, 4.7 million thereof exposed us on the weaknesses that we continue to have in making sure that we find that we comply around the issue of office lease. And two issues that are important out of it is tax clearance. As it has been said, when landlords after having been appointed during the course of the contract, you find that sometimes their tax clearance are not being complied on. Secondly, in other instances, you find that the contract periods from our side are extended beyond the term of period of the contract without us having got the proper deviation approval for related approvals as it were to be. So that is the important aspect there. The minor area of fruitless and wasteful expenditure we have identified is correctly as tabulated 1,619 rands. And in that, we are able to recover 649 rands. It's normally looked upon in terms of whether an employee was not careful in managing the operations, like for instance, if a vehicle licensing renewal was done late, and therefore it is the employee concern is found fault and they've got to pay back. Slide 48, employee and organizational capacity and innovation learning. Slide 49, the interested point of focus here, as already indicated, as an organization, we depend much more on making sure that our organization is functional with the staff that which we have, which are our critical assets. And in this respect, the focus for us is to make sure that through our national footprint, we have full capacity that which will make us operational. And in this last period, as already indicated, we have targeted for staff planning of over 95%, and the recruitment target level was supposed to be 98%, but we have been only able to recruit up to 92.8%, and it has been explained it was an issue of managing the budgetary uncertainty. Slide 50, on that, the two elements that which we want to indicate is that we continue to comply on providing the annual training plan and the annual training reports to succeed on time. And on the other side, we have the employment equity plan and reports for the last periods which are ending in this financial year that which we have. And we will be preparing ourselves for the next one. But the slide number 51 outlined to show that as we end up the cycle of the employment equity, we are still not yet at a level where we set of the target. Like for instance, the targeted annual target for black employees within the organization is supposed to be 91%. As at year end, we were still at 89.8%. Without getting into the individual area thereof, as outlined on, the important aspect that we want to indicate is that while we try to be pursuing to reach the targets as said, we will not be able to by the end of this financial year. We also, in consideration of the budget cut going forward for the next 2 to 3 years, we are not really certain that we will be able to meet the target as set. However, whenever vacancies arise, we attempt to make sure that we make good of the gaps that which we have. Slide number 52. Just on important other aspect, our training remain to be at high level. The only element that which we could not meet our target was on legal staff training. However, we have made a particular targeted on critical training for our legal staff, and the other ones which were left out, we hope that we have managed them to the level that we could given the budget that which we have. Employment value proposition, because of the current situation that which we have of budget constraints, we have always performed good, and that is why in terms also of recruitment, we had a stable recruitment at level at a high level and staff turnover rate. However, in this past financial year, because of the budget cut, we have experienced employee dissatisfaction, morale of staff has gone down, and in a way it is now encroaching in maintenance of a high employment value proposition, and that is what we are faced with. Notwithstanding that, as already indicated, we have continued to be accredited as one of the top employers, and we are leading the public sector segment for the fourth year in consecutively, as it were to be reported. Employee relations within our targeted measures, When you look at our annual report, you would have noted that grievances and disciplinary matters are still within our target. Even though we have unsatisfactory, among other staff, we continue to engage with staff so that we sustain good relationship. We are also, on the other hand, having incentive for staff. We recognize their achievement, and annual achievement awards ceremonies continue to be done. We also recognize National Day events, and in that, Heritage Day, among others, has been one of the focal points for this past period. Leadership development, we have developed a program wherein we would coach staff, particularly managers, and we have an outline tool called the 9-box talent management tool. It is much more done to ensure that our succession planning is properly managed, and we capacitate all our staff from lower level up to management level, and that helps us to build up the organization looking forward. And in this respect, we continue to maintain it. Slide number 53. On IT side, the important aspect that we can indicate in there is that we are fostering to be using the best of technology that is there in the market. And in doing that, we are still operating on the virtual private network, and our hardware and software application have been replaced in terms of our capital asset replacement program. And in this past financial year, we had some target, and our wide area network, because we are widely spread given our geographical placement of our offices, we are targeted still to be at 95%, and availability of our system was at 94.64%. We just had some glitches one area and another, but we were able to maintain them. And as already indicated, we are rolling out the new system. However, in rolling out the new system, we had already geared ourselves on the fourth industrial revolution in terms of progression. One of the critical issues of technology is that online sign of attendance registers are already operational. Our document management system has been digitized, and we are able to operate on that platform. And at the same time, we are mindful that our bandwidth needs to be doubled, because much more all relies on data is becoming a norm. And the last slide on that, slide number 54. We had a practice of surveying acceptance and getting perception of how stakeholders view our services outside there. And normally we would appoint a third party, and they would go around and have a survey and ask questions about our legal quality services, our reach in terms of our services. And the last one that which we delved into, as indicated there, was saying that while we are growing in brand awareness, we were already at 66%. We have since decided that the last year we will take a break, and we will come again this financial year. That will be by the last quarter, and we will go out and we will make a comparison. The important aspect that which we are continuing, not to spend in the point that we haven't done a recent survey, we continue to brand ourselves as an organization. Digital advertisement has become a norm with us. Social media platform usage in terms of Facebook, Twitter has become also a focal point, realizing that in this generation that's how things are being done. Community outreach and public education, we cooperate with other government institutions to make sure that at least we can be able to reach other interests. And the legal aid advice line continue to be also a lever for us, because it's able to reach even beyond what we could in terms of our local offices. We use our official languages in terms of talking to clients, and that has been very productive for us, and it helped us to expand our reach. We have also co-branded with the prisons and the correctional services, and in that case, police cells also. We engage also with the station commanders to clarify our position of access to justice, to ensure that people always get assistance when and it is to be necessary. We engage with the media, and as reported in there, our targeted media engagement has been fruitful to us, and 59 media engagement with journalists and editors, and also 2,431 media mentions in the print is a reflection of exactly what is happening. We continue also to have round table discussions. In this case, is to showcase the issue about what is necessary to be done because of our constitutional mandate, and also to make sure that justice is being realized in terms of understanding from all society areas. And in this case, all our stakeholders get involved in different areas. Further than that, we also produce electronic stakeholder newsletters so that we can reach others in terms of how we have delivered for some period past. That was for me the last slide from that. Thank you. See you.
Jefferson, we just also want to report in relation to our strategic plan that this 2018-19 year, which is under review, was the fourth year of implementation of our strategic plan 2015-2020, and that overall we are happy to say that we are on track in terms of all of the programs we set out to deliver in that period. I think that in section 5, the next slide, I just want to indicate that I'm not going to go through it slide by slide, but just to explain to you that this graphically represents what we've said to you, and it just provides a quick summary, so there's no need to actually repeat that, but it's an interesting summary that that one can look at also to remind us what has happened. And then the slide following this, after this one, these slides are useful in terms of the comparison with the prior year. So you can see how the delivery has changed or not changed for legal services on this slide, and then on the other slides in terms of finance measures as well as in terms of the people-related issues. So, Chairperson, we are now at the section where we're supposed to report on quarter one performance. Now, mindful of the time, and I don't want to use up all the time so that committee members don't have a chance to ask questions, so I want to get guidance from you. Do you want me to continue with this section? And then after this, we will close with what we are doing in this financial year, like the plan for the year and some of the issues we're dealing with. Or do you want to move to questions and then people can read this at their own leisure?
I think we should start with the questions. And then we, if there's time, we'll then assist. We can then present. I would like to make some of the arrangements. Thank you very much for the presentation. It's quite detailed. I'll just kick start some of the issues at hand. There's obviously immediately one can express concern with the implications the cuts will have on your court coverage, which you indicate will drop by 7% in the district court and about 10% in the high courts. Now, the factor there is you also, notwithstanding your engagement with the Treasury, which brought you back the current financial year of 5%. But there's still this 93 million during shortfall between 1920 as well as 2021 over the next 3 years. You face that. You've noted that with great concern because that affects the whole chain of the court system, as we all know, members. Right through from, you said 80% of your representation in the High Court and about 70% in the District Court of all appearances.
In criminal
courts, of course, which means that no matter a trial, almost 70% of the circle, 95% of cases being dealt with in hearings, including regional courts, of course, can proceed for that matter. This is one of the cardinal aspects of postponements, notwithstanding your reach. So we know that, but
great concern. We will certainly engage also ourselves with the necessary authorities. But coming back to the Mark, you were saying there's a 6.5% decrease in the new chosen criminal matters. How are we, perhaps you are a commentator, how are we to receive or perceive that? I wouldn't want for one moment think there's less offences committed by children, but is it just that they don't reach you, or is it are they represented by someone else, or the community? You can just maybe comment on that. Then the means test of yours, was it March, and I understand was changed, and the impact of that, you might want to comment slightly on that. And then when you say your report that 42% of your clients are waiting trial, and 21% have a quick bail, which remain unpaid. Now, this brought my attention to what I assume those, well, I don't know what level the amounts are, the high and the low. The low ones, the menial ones, I assume that the case flow management committee is able to bring those matters back to court, especially where they're unaffordable. But maybe not today, you can maybe submit if you have that kind of information. I'm not sure, maybe it's more NPA, I assume, but you can indicate that. And then lastly, from my side, there was a question about the way legal aid has been applied for and where it's refused. That kind of statistical analysis would be interesting for us to see whether they qualify or not, indicating that, or maybe even those who qualify that was refused in reasons. In future, it would be good to have that kind of analysis for our purposes here. But let me not ask all the questions, let me leave it to the members to engage further. Thank you. We've got Honorable Secretary, Honorable Horn, Honorable Gola, and Honorable Janki in that order. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Also, thank you to the Chairperson of the team. Let me just note, Chairperson, the good work by the outgoing CEO, Ms.
Elalanga.
Yes, now we as a committee, I think it is a proper to just to thank her for the good work that she has done, but I think she will never forget back. She would have to come and again, visit and share the experience with the new CEO. However, Chairperson, one would like to know how far is the progress in terms of recruiting a new CEO. Also, Chairperson, on the issue of the staff, much as you see that the staff is back after some grievances made to legal aid and then also them having to strike. But can we also on that one get a report, maybe also the assurance in terms of the plan as to how do we keep that going forward? We note the issue of the reduction and also the one of the presentations also mentioned the issue of the low morale of the staff because of the reduction and all that. But what is it that we do also to keep the momentum so that we don't find ourselves in a situation where our poor and vulnerable get affected? Next time. And also there was a response on the issue of hearing those who are using the hearing aid earlier, and then it was important that there is something that has been done on the website. But I was just thinking as I'm sitting here that, you know, our community, because of inequality, what has been done for those who are not having access in the technology, most of those who are from the rural areas, what is it making the plan that we have in assisting that they also have this information to be shared also on that. Chairperson, one another one is on the issue of the procurement of offices and that of the sheriff. Do you have any plans maybe? Because you indicated that you have problems in terms of the experience and all that, but you need those things. So what is it that maybe you are thinking of in terms of making sure that that doesn't become or hampering you in your work going forward? And then lastly, Chairperson, this issue of the rental of offices, considering the state of the economy and the reduction and all that, is there any way that maybe we can try to, I don't know, get some offices where maybe we won't pay? You know, there are those government buildings that are not used, and some of them, if you can see now, they are really encountering a new problem in terms of these government buildings that are being dilapidated and are hanging there without being used. Now there are people who are really taking those buildings and making use of them, renovate them. Some of them, they're not even renovating them. They are using our people to hire those buildings and pay them money. There have been some reports, a lot of reports in terms of those government buildings. Can't we also look on that side and check if we can't get something out of those buildings? You know, that is the last option.
Thank you very much. To clarify this issue about the sheriff, it was asked now, because we thought by now we know the ministry has going there. We're so used to think further before we respond later, that they've not been on the CSD. Should that not be, and whether you have taken it up with the ministry that they be, before they appointed, that would be one of the conditions of appointment. Every year they appoint sheriffs, 12 vacancies, or regular drives that get it in their regulations for that matter. So when they advertise, that would be the condition. Because ultimately, as you point out, if you don't pay, you're in a back corner in the middle against a hard wall. They'll process it, and they know that. So they're very lucky. So the only way on that one, be very clear, but it was before. Will be fair discrimination, but for that way. Thank you, Mr. Honorable Horn.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Acting Chair. From our side also, I think we want to express our appreciation of the long years of dedicated service of Ms. Veda Lankar, and we wish her well wherever she goes. Hopefully she stays in the system somehow. To add value somewhere else. Chair, just a few questions. The outgoing CEO had forecasted that the budget cuts ultimately will have an impact. We see from the presentation today that they are of the view that yes, there's more mediation, there's more other avenues pursued by the NPA. So I get the sense that Legal Aid is still at this stage satisfied that nobody is left unattended to. But if we could be apprised whether they foresee that representation of those who cannot afford their own representation will be impacted on in the near future if the budget cuts continue. Then in respect of the enhancement committees, if we could be apprised possibly of whether legal aid and they possibly sit with the situation uniquely so that they are represented as an entity on all of them. So it would be good if the committee could be apprised as to whether they feel that the enhancement committees is efficient to to borrow the word, and whether there's more that should be done. So it, has it become a tick box exercise? I gather from the stats that it's more or less four per provincial enhancement committee per year and one for the national one. Is that in itself sufficient? And do they experience it that the issues are on the table at one meeting has been resolved, or at least there's an improvement by the next? Then lastly, Chair, also, and maybe attaching to the issue of quality assurance, I just 2 days ago found myself in the interesting situation that I was, as sometimes happens with us as public representatives, approached by somebody who wanted to complain about somebody at Legal Aid. And then I realized that we've never been informed as to, let's say, a complaints line or a ombud internally or something. So maybe for my own selfish purposes, if we could be informed as to ultimately where do people go if they want to complain about the service they received from an employee or official from Legal Aid. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let us maybe welcome the report by Legal Aid South Africa as the committee. And flag and note some few issues, Chair, because we are preparing for the budget review report and recommendation. Chair, maybe let's first comment how the board itself has been composed. It reflects South African demographics. But maybe let's register that for the future purposes, let's inject young blood. Necessary that we have an addition of young blood into the board, so that we have an occurring. Let me pass the chair. Chair, I think it is important for us as Parliament to commend equally the accessibility and the responsiveness of legal aid practitioners. Now, we came back from a constituency recess this week. Back at home, in my rural areas, there is a court there. Ms. Jali knows about it. It's called the Darafile Magistrate Court. There you find on daily basis, when there's a court sitting, there's a legal aid practitioner that is able to assist where any there is. I think I don't say I must share with the committee and legal aid board, but at least we see some of, although there might be some challenges, but we see that they are trying to stretch their wings across board. Chair, the concept poor and vulnerable is very broad and complex, which I think we must be able to contextualize into the legal aid context. But what do you mean when you say we represent the poor and the vulnerable? We briefed that there has been an amendment to the means test. If you can be briefed
about that such amendment? What has actually caused the necessity for us to amend even the means test? And how have we then amended the means test as well? Honorable Chair, Honorable Chair has said I must brief you that she's rushing for a flight to Johannesburg. Not that she is. But she has covered the point of the CEO. There's an issue, Chair, that relates to buildings which we use as offices, which some of them may be we have ownership over, some of them may be we are leasing them. If we can be given a detailed account of the use of offices by legal aid. How many offices do we have in the country? 6,427. How many do we own? How many do we lease? What are challenges relating to that in terms of our operations as the legal aid? And actually, how do we therefore plan to ensure that at least majority of the offices we utilize are under our own ownership? What are the plans in place with regard to that? Part of the inevitable thing, Chair, is that we have actually entered in the digital world, where a number of things are done through networks. The time for paperwork, the actual physical paperwork, is diminishing slightly but surely. I want to check with the legal aid as it relates to the fourth industrial revolution. How far have they gone in terms of digitalizing the operations of the institute to ensure that there is efficient and effectiveness? And if there has been steps that have been taken by legal aid to that effect, how has it affected legal aid clientele, which in some is the most illiterate people from the remote Bundus? Chair, further to that, if we have moved towards the digitalization of our operations, have we been able to train our employee in terms of keeping up with the new systems, if we have already reached that point those systems? Chair, I think it is important that when we are hosting these institutions, we don't merely base our engagement with such situations on the negatives and the challenges. It is important to note where any of our institutions has done good and has performed well, so as to up the morale. We have taken a posture here, Honorable Gyanji, that, actually we have been briefed by AG on your audit performance on Tuesday, but we have taken a posture that we're not going to congratulate you. It's actually incorrect for us to say congratulations as if you won a cup somewhere. You have done what you were supposed to have done. You have. We can't say congratulations to a fish for swimming, but we are commending the sterling work that you have consistently been showing relates to the Auditor General annual assessment. We are pleased to share that this is the 18th year, 1-8, that they've been performing very well into that regard. We will say continue representing our people well, not congratulations. Keep up work until you receive the highest achievement.
Chair, the other thing that I think is very important is for legal aid to remain a very strategic instrument to create employment in the country. When we go around talking to people, part of the central things that which we note is the rising unemployment rate. Particularly, it has been a center to address such calamity in our society. And I think we must applaud you for doing such a sterling work. And you have been consistent with it. But sometimes some of the institutions are doing well in terms of the employee or in terms of addressing the unemployment crisis in the country, which is caused by many factors. Perhaps some of them are not even under our control. But legal aid has been consistent, Chair. I think it is worth noting to be a strategic center to address issues of unemployment, an issue that has been a crisis to the general society. I think, Chair, let me end there. Thank you very much.
You, Honourable Janky. Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. Just a few points. I think both the colleagues have covered me on quite a number of fronts. Just to thank the presentation. It's quite long, I must say. We started after 2. You finished 23 minutes past 3. I was in a different space. If I was chairing, I would have asked you to summarize. Because you've given us a report a while ago. So when you come here, I'm of the view that you should just sit there and withdraw questions. Because here's the report, but let me leave that for now. But thank you for that. The second point, Chair, that I want to shoot straight to the outgoing CEO. You say legal advice and assistance provided in 724,253 matters. That's the number that you receive that you dealt with. I'm interested in the one that you missed out. What is that number? Because this is what you took in because of your capacity and what you could do. Do you know the number that is out there as we speak that missed out on this? This is where my interest is. Can you share that? Because once we know that, it completes the picture. Because for now the picture is incomplete. That completes the picture because it adds a more pressure on your budget cuts, as an example. But it begins to say to you, as a legal aid, this is what we're supposed to be dealing with. So please share that. I'm very much interested in that. In other words, how many cases could you not assist? My second point is that in thanking you, I am interested, if you can answer it now, please give us feedback on that in writing. I'm interested to get a report, perhaps in a spreadsheet that indicates that you have a total number of cases that you have, for example, per office, okay? Vis-a-vis, so if I take Northern Cape and Western Cape as an example, because I come from that province, so I'm interested to understand, out of that 724, what is the Western Cape intake? But I want that broken down in the context of the Western Cape. Because the Western Cape has got quite a number of offices. I want to know what the Western Cape has, from what offices, from what areas and communities it is coming from. Because I have a sense that when I look at the offices,
unless you can tell me otherwise, that some committees have to pay to come to your offices. And you can only know that when you understand this is the case, the demand, the supply, people will knock on our doors. Certainly I'm not in Stellenbosch. You might come to that conclusion, but the office is in Stellenbosch. You're not in Etlo, but the office is in Etlo. So I want to get to that point. Because that's what speaks to the access of legal aid to communities. So that I don't pay. I don't travel with taxi from Khayelitsha and another train. Simply I'm going to legal services, which is supposed to be accessible to me. So I'm raising that because it was just a bit odd for me that I would not see a Nietzsche's plane, the biggest Ghanaian community, a Khayelitsha, you have a space there. So maybe that was informed by who deals with this. And I'm saying that you can do across provinces, across your six provinces. It's important for us to know that so that we follow where the money is going. So that's my second point, Chair. Because I would hate a situation where the where offices are, it was only a question of where space was available and not necessarily where the issues are. I hope you understand my point, where I'm getting to. I believe that, and I think colleagues have thanked you for your sterling work. I actually want to address myself to the one taking over, the one getting to your shoes. She's here. Thank you very much. The only comment I want to make is I'm hoping that, because I'm sure you would have said these things in your interview, by the time you're doing it, you knew that Legal Aid has got more than 10 years of these awards, had all of these kind of good stories, but they wanted you to be there, perhaps not to be here. So the only message I want to send is that you certainly, from the story we're getting, it seems you're getting to be true, but can you be yourself and give us your footprint and take this success to the next level in your own way, not to be who was there. I really want to say that message. And following that, for me would be to, as part of your homework and Justice Makome, to, in addressing this issue of budget cuts, about 8%, and it's because this is what you're having across in the country, across all departments. So I'm interested from both of you as leading this institution, perhaps not now, again, because I'm not sure if you have made a case for legal aid, for cushion against the budget cut. And that case is not the fact that you have an unqualified audit. Forget about it. That's, as he said, it's expected that you do that. If you were able to share three things that you think that these three things can help you make a case why this committee should be supporting you to say in everything else that you do, we think that legal aid must be insulated from these kind of cuts. What is that case? Because it's of no use to just hope for Treasury to look the other way when we are not aggressively making our case. Because if the case is saying the work that we do, so when you do this, when it is this 8.9% that you cut, in practical terms, it means these communities, these people are not going to be assisted. I am hoping that some kind of looking forward to say, how do we not just sit there as victims of budget cuts, but kind of say this is where we are. I don't want to labor the point. I would look forward to that, that you can come back and talk about that before we stop to speak about the next cut, so that we have a case to put forward. My next point is on irregular expenditure. In my watch it's a no. I mean, you have irregular expenditure awaiting condonation from 7.1 million to 10 million. That's irregular expenditure. And then you're complaining about budget cuts. Because that's not done by an external force. That's supposed to be in your control in most cases. So I'm saying, I think that there's a need to explain this and be given a proper plan as how do we avoid such things that we should avoid. So because the very same thing, this is the first thing that kills your case. This is the first thing. If I were treasurer, this kills your case. Without me going to the details of what, which I'm interested in, what is this irregular? And what are the consequences of those who were found on the wanting side on this? My next point on that is just on the issue of sheriff. Again, just perhaps a suggestion, because the sheriffs are also in the same home of the justice and correctional services. They are part of us. So we've got to find a way that we deal with them not as an outsider. I was reading their report, the sheriff board report, their annual report as well. My colleague was chairing, had to resign in May because she was part of that board of the sheriff, Hisham Mohammed. But I'm looking for a situation where we're getting to a conversation and discussion about if, again, this goes back to that, the issue of the case, if the sheriffs are such a standing challenge in your work, what are the suggested plans that you need to have, given the fact that they all are found in one portfolio, without saying that they must not do their work because it's legal aid? What to kind of find more kind of constructive engagement in that regard. Let me just quickly go to finances, Chair, before I go to human resources. Maybe just as clarity on your part, in terms of these budget cuts, to just explain to us and share with us in detail, in practical terms, how this budget cut will affect your post as well as the coverage in terms of your court coverage. We just need to again, I'm emphasizing this point. It goes back to the earlier point I made. This is the issue of the case, the motivation that you put up. But also, one on the budget shortfalls of 2019-2020-2021. Indeed, you know, the issue about you said this means that for 2019-20 onwards, the budget shortfall portion of 98 million for that and 134 million. This is what you should have, you're not going to have. Is that the, have you had a session with National Treasure? Not just send them a motivation. Like you had a session. And we did this also with the public protector to have a discussion with them, and if you had, what is the outcome of that discussion? If you have not had that, did you think about having that? So let me leave that. Let me just come to the human resources, because there's no legal aid to cloud people without its employees. Because you might get awards, but we judge you about how you manage your people. Because you might get awards because of, and you might get them without treating them good. That's not the point I'm making. Just to go on page 101 of your annual report, not your presentation. Because that's another thing about it. Because what you come and present here is what you choose to present to us. At least the report goes bigger than what you present. But sometimes you will never present some of the hidden problems, and we dig into to get into those. On page 101, employment and vacancies per province, table 17. My interest there is so you dealt with that in terms of the provinces, and again I'll just raise one province, the Western Cape, which has the biggest rate of vacancy, actually 10%, 9.9% vacancy. Is there any explanation for that? And if we're to take that 724, where does it stand into that? What is the reason, besides the budget cuts, that you might want to refer to? Page 102, employment changes. And what I'm missing here in your report, unlike others, you're not stating what period this is. Do I have to assume that this is the reporting period? Because when you don't state it, it's not clear. The template is allowing you to state that as at 1st April 2018 to 31st March 2019. You don't do that. In your report, but the interest I'm having, and this is my consistent question to all of them, that I want to take, I will leave top management, because organizations that I've been part of, the life of organization is not a top management. There's one or two levels that give life to an organization, and that, in your case, would be your professional qualified and your skilled. In terms of that, you got in terms of appointments 269 in this reporting period, and terminations 286. Okay, now this is, we talk about your health now as an organization. More people left you, just in terms of this number, in 12 months. Give us the reasons. Is it because you? Now this is not, you hear people leaving a best employer with that number. What is the issue here? What's happening? Why are they running away? Or are you so good that you've trained them for better jobs? Because further down, I deal with issues of, I might even go there now, reasons for leaving. Which is the same page, table 20. There are two big numbers. It's the resignations as well as the end of contract. Those are your biggest numbers. 117 resignations. This is what you have. And you have 256 who have contract. Again, you don't state what period this was. It could be 12 months, it could be, because you have not stated, I'm using 12 months. And so the picture doesn't look good for you, an award-winning organization. This is where I am. The resignations don't explain it, because the next thing is to ask is the exit interviews. Why are they resigning in such big numbers? Would you be able to just share that if you've done those exit interviews? The next page, 103. I'm still on human resources, the people who make you look good. Table 21, labor relations, misconduct and disciplinary action. There's quite a, for 12 months, I find that to be an alarming number. Verbal warning, 10. So for 12 months, you've warned 10 people in your written warning, 26. The others that I've read, yeah, I don't know the report they've met, are not coming any closer to this. So what is happening here? Is there instability? Is there a fight here? Are we losing discipline with our staff? Well, that's what your report says. I'm not taking it anywhere else. Yet. Final written one in five. Maybe the positive thing is that you stopped there, but I don't see any dismissals. From written warning, further written warning, and then all of that, what you don't have is dismissals during your reporting period. Let me pause there, Chief.
Sure. And well, thank you. Now I know why I asked or made a proposition about the sheriff. How to get around that one, but I'm sure the legal aid will engage on that matter. But thank you very much, members, for the questions. Judge, I don't know whether you're starting.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I don't know how much time we have. Some of the questions will be answered now. Others, obviously, will have to come back to the public in the box. The first one that I wanted to respond to was about, I wanted to find out how far we're going with the new CEO, the process, and she seems to have not been aware that she's already here. So
yes.
Maybe she must speak.
Yeah. She's doing the handover process. And look, one of the issues, I'm just going to rattle some of them. One of the issues that has come out regularly is this issue about the sheriff's the irregular expenses. I think it's possible that will be itemized, but we are not responsible for appointment of sheriffs. And they are the highest people that you will get from the answer that cost this irregular expenditure. That's number one. The second one is the landlord. When you enter into contract, people qualify somewhere down the line, they no longer have this CSD. We are in need of space to be able to deliver services. We have entered into contracts for 5 years. We can't pull out immediately because of that document. They will keep on saying, no, I'm getting my bookkeeper to get this advice. So we are trapped in that situation. But landlord, yes, it's easy to do that. If we have alternative accommodation, we'll move. But if we're tied up, we can't move before that time. But sheriffs, which have become a constant problem, we have discussed that issue with the minister, and sometimes also with the sheriff's board. There was a time when we engaged the sheriff's board itself and said, please ask your members to comply. We don't have jurisdiction over that. But we have not been able to get any response. Let me do the rest of the other things, with a lot of them, CEO and other things.
KJ, I think we should be able to respond to most of them depending on the time you have. Do you want to finish at a certain time or it's fine?
Yeah, you can proceed to be presented up to 4:30.
Okay. So I think that the rest we will send you written responses where we need some data. But let me deal with the issue relating to the bigger issue relating to the extent to which we've engaged Treasury on our budget cuts and what has happened. I think that since we've had budget cuts, we have engaged Treasury on an ongoing basis, both as part of the Justice Family and directly. We also, as the chairperson of the board and ourselves, met with the minister to also discuss the impact of this. So I think that is why in 2018-19, the year that we are looking at, which we reported on, was the worst year in terms of the budget cuts, including both the shortfall as well as the 5% cut, which was the 164 million rand cut that we dealt with. And then in the next, and because of those representations and engagements and an explanation that over the years, because of the efficiencies that we have introduced, it's very hard for us to cut any further because we explain to them the breakdown of our budget, the different aspects. And that is why they then, in for the year that we are now in 2019-20, they then took away the 5% cut. So that engagement assisted us, and it then left us with the shortfall which remained. However, I must say that if you look at the way in which our court coverage has reduced specifically, and I think Chairperson, you raised that when you're opening comments, is an indication of the impact of that budget cut, the biggest impact. And there what it shows, and that is that although we will continue to serve clients, because of the fact that we reduce the percentage coverage of court, that means the percentage of time we are at each of the courts, it means that it takes longer for people to get assisted, and therefore there will be greater case backlogs, and therefore the criminal justice system itself will work slower. Our biggest concern is if there are going to be further cuts, which Treasury is still going to announce in November after the Minister's MTB BPS speech, it will mean that it's going to be a serious issue for us if we have 5% cuts. And for us, it also means that it will impact staffing. So it will impact staffing, which will impact services, which will impact court coverage, and therefore less people will be assisted. You're already seeing it in numbers. You're also seeing it in the reduction in court coverage. You've seen it in the reduction in civil matters. So I think that there's no doubt that that's affecting us. We are, however, mindful that I think government as a whole has budget cuts, and it's not unique to us. And therefore, in the end, I think government has to spend what it has. So if it means a reduced service, I think it's in that spirit that we have made representations, but we understand that if it is something that we have to live with, we're just clarifying what the impact is. It isn't feasible to expect that the service delivery will continue at the levels that we've had if there are budget cuts. So I think that clarifies those budget-related issues. On the issues related to the staffing issues in terms of the annual report, yes, I think that those are all for the reporting period, so we can take that as 12 months. And if in terms of the way in which we want to have the presentation, we're quite happy if you just want us to respond to questions. We prepared the briefing because that's been the way it's been done, and that's what we were requested to do. But it's also okay for us if in future you want to. I think in relation to all of the questions that have been raised on the latter issues relating to the issues of irregular expenditure and budget the HR issues, my colleagues will answer, but I want to say that we don't believe that what you're seeing here is something that you should be alarmed at, because if you look at it in terms of being benchmarked against any best practice, it's in fact lower than what is the norm. So that is why when we report on, for example, the turnover of staff, we said that our turnover is less than 6%. The industry norm in any industry is over 10%. And that is what reflects that people stay. You will get people. You can't use numbers. You've got to look at it in that context. Whether you then look at disciplines or whatever, it's also benchmarked, and it's less than 1%. And the point is that where we have to manage performance, we will continue to manage performance and address issues as they arise. And if in that context, those are the numbers that come through, it means that those things show that people are being held accountable for their performance. And when they are not, then we will respond to it. We're not seeing this as something that is a cause for alarm. We think that this is an organization that's in charge of its stuff. On the issue, one other issue I wanted to raise relating to the issue of the staff responses. I think that's something that would have concerned most people when they read about what was seemingly a strike at Legal Aid. There was a strike, but it lasted for 2 days, and it was largely affected our Gauteng courts, and we had a full report on the number of courts that were affected, and we provided that also to our board and to the minister. And I think that, again, that links directly to the issue of budget cuts and the reality that budget cuts create for us difficult choices in relation to balancing the cut in terms of services to the communities, in terms of cuts to staffing, and in terms of cuts to staff benefits. And it's in balancing those cuts that we've raised as a concern that we have had to make cuts to staff benefits, which impacts staff, and that is why the staff are feeling unsettled. But they're also feeling unsettled because it could affect jobs because of the fact that the budget cuts are continuing. And that is why those issues arose. And in that context, I think some of those things will continue as long as our financial uncertainties and constraints remain. So I just wanted to raise that as broader issues in terms of finances. And then there are some specific issues you've asked about which I think I'll ask my colleagues to begin to respond one by one. And then what we can do is those that we don't have the data for, we will then provide you and send the responses. So let me start with the legal issues. If the legal issues, Brian, you can start with, and then Patrick, and then the support and finance issues, the CFO and COO will add to, and then we can see how much time we have.
Thanks. Thanks, Vidu. Chairperson, in fact, I'm just going to continue with the budget cuts and its implications, of course. Vidu did address that. What I can say is that besides, any reduction in capacity will result in a reduction in court coverage. But there is a process that is ongoing at the moment within the cluster to look at the courts and its usage, and whether the infrastructure should be rationalized in order to accommodate it. And we think that is a very important project. We think that there are some courts that can be reduced in terms of the number of days it sits. Some courts are not as productive as it should be. And if there is a reduction in the infrastructure, that is the number of courts that has to be served, then it will, to a certain extent, cushion the fact that numbers have decreased within the sector. I can also say that if you looked at the three-year numbers that was indicated in one of the slides, you'll notice that the actual number of new matters that comes to the court has also decreased. So to a certain extent, that has also played a cushioning effect in terms of our reduction in court coverage. But I think we have reached a stage now when any further cuts may not necessarily be able to absorb without it actually impacting very negatively. Our numbers show that in the regional court and the high court, the backlog matters are increasing. And a direct consequence of that, or a direct reason for that, is the fact that there has been a reduction in capacity, which means that legal aid, if we reduce our capacity by whether it's 10 or 100 or 200 staff, the number of new matters doesn't decrease for legal aid in Africa, because we still have to take it on. But the time we have and the manpower we have to process it is obviously reduced, which will result in us tending to do the matters not as efficiently as if we had full capacity. There was a question by the chair in terms of children's matters and how do we perceive the reduction in children's matters. In fact, I think to a certain extent we must be happy, but at the same time concerned. Happy in the sense that the Child Justice Act was intended to ensure that the number of children that are processed through the criminal justice system is reduced. So the reducing number of children means, to a certain extent, that the impact of that act may be realizing its results. Now, what we can assure this committee is that Legal Aid South Africa is really observant and monitors children in custody very vigilantly. And when a child is in custody, immediately we liaise with the relevant stakeholders and we ensure that all the children are in are represented. So there is some studies currently taking place to determine if the numbers are caused by the fact that maybe children are not being arrested and processed, or are they being diverted, etc. But all I can say to this committee is that we are happy that when children enter the criminal justice system, Legal Aid South Africa ensures that they are immediately represented. I leave the means to Patrick because that falls more in his functional area. But I can say that the question by the chair would regard the 42% in custody as at the end of the financial year would be at a point in time. So it would mean even matters that we took on the day or the previous day or the week. So at that point in time, it is 42%. Regrettably, our systems at the moment does not necessarily input the bail amount for each person. Okay, we rely on the other stakeholders to provide that information. So we do receive information on, for instance, how many people are on bail less than 1,000 rands, and we start to monitor. So in the recent part, we are now starting to look at bail very closely. What are the bail amounts? So we're starting to input it on our system, and we're starting to look at whether periods have extended beyond which they should have been processed through the system. So it is an indicator that we observe or we monitor quite closely, and that is those in custody. The committee will also note that we work a lot in terms of the remand detainees who are long in custody over 2 years, and we've got a particular program where we support the cluster in providing the information on each person in custody over 2 years, so that other cluster partners can also assist. With regard to legal aid, in terms of those being refused and the outcome of appeals, etc., all I can say to the committee is that with regard to criminal legal aid services, 99% of people plus who apply for legal aid are actually granted legal aid. There's very few people within the criminal legal services delivery who are refused because of means. Okay, and where they exceed for due to means, we always look at what the constitutional impact of being refused and how it would affect the person. And when we find that the person, for instance, will not be able to afford legal representation for a duration of their matter, be it a complex matter or it's going to be in the regional court, then legal aid is still provided with a small contribution on their part. In terms of Honourable Owen, some of your questions on this, the impact of the budget, I think we covered that. The NEC, what I'd like to state is that the NEC only meets once or twice a year, so the impact there, I wouldn't say it's significant. So we're getting the key leadership players in each sector and opportunity for the Chief Justice, etc., to dwell on key issues. I think there is an important role for each one to play, and it's about ensuring that the leadership of each structure takes responsibility for obstacles. But the key work is done at the PECs, where all our committees, all our provincial executives are actively involved. All I can say with regard to the success or efficiency of this committee is largely dependent on the role of the judge president in that province. When you have judges presidents who are active, who can see the benefits of it, then these committees work very well. Where judges present do not take this committee seriously, then regrettably other committees have to be formed to actually ensure that there is good efficient coordination within the sector. I'm not going to necessarily state at this stage which committees work or not, but I think that's something that the committee can look into it. And with regard to the last question from Honourable Yankees, with regards you looking more in terms of what the numbers are, not the necessary numbers that are presented, but with regards to the numbers that we miss, all I can say in this regard is we can say quite confidently, based on the research we have done, and that is in the criminal justice system, the number of persons who are not represented by legal aid and go through the system 100%, that would be the missing number. And a research that we did a year or two ago, where we tracked every person through the process over a 3-month period, revealed that there's only 1% of accused who appear at trial stage of a proceeding, both in the High Court and the Regional Court, who are unrepresented. And that's not because they have not been offered legal aid. They have been offered many, many times, and maybe have even been pressurized by the presiding office to take legal aid, but who refused. So it's only 1% with regard to the Regional Court and High Court. In the District Court, the number was 6%. So by and large, in the criminal justice system, there's very few that we actually miss, and those that are unrepresented, it's not for them not being offered specifically legal aid. I think several Patrick will deal with that. I think I can hand over this stage to Patrick. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Maybe I should deal with the means test first. So the means test is contained in the legal aid regulations. The previous any changes to the regulations requires parliamentary involvement, and therefore both the National Assembly as well as the National Council of Provinces, and therefore both the committees, are required to then consider any changes to the regulations. So that means test did come through the previous committee and then was subsequently gazetted. It was an increase, so what it really means is more people would be covered by the legal aid scheme, and it had been that we hadn't adjusted the means test over a number of years, and so even when you look at the value of money in terms of CPI, we needed to look at that and adjust it so that we don't have people that should fall within falling up because the value of money has decreased. So So that's what we did, and we look at two aspects within that. It's obviously your income after tax, and also then your assets, whether immovable or immovable and fixed assets, the amounts were then set in terms of the means test. So where you're looking there, a single person, 7,400 after tax, a household, 8,000 after tax in terms of income. In regards to assets, movable assets of up to 128,000, so that's cash monies in the bank, or you have an immovable property up to, I think it was 650,000 that you're able to have, and that's net. So if you have a house of R1 million, but you owe 500,000 on a bond, the net value of that property is 500,000. So you wouldn't be excluded. So I think we will need to also then understand that. I think what I need to say to the committee is, the means test is an easy administrative way for us to determine whether you qualify. It's not the be-all and the end-all, one. Two, both the heads of offices have a discretion on the income up to allow someone to exceed by up to R1,500 a month. The provincial heads have up to R3,000 and up to R100,000 on assets to allow someone to exceed both the means test and the assets. And then, if they're still beyond that, they have a further level of appeal where we, in essence, apply what we call is the constitutional means test. It says, are you able to afford the cost of your legal representation? And specifically, there's the complexity of the case, the duration of the case, impacts on the cost, and then also the question of what your income is and your expenses are as to whether you're going to be able to afford the costs or not. So I think that becomes, specifically in criminal cases, becomes the driver behind us in terms of what we consider and where we would grant legal aid. In those instances where they do exceed, in criminal matters we do levy a contribution in terms of what is allowed by the regulations read with our manual, and we're looking at something similar which for on the civil side, but at the civil side at the moment we don't have that. I hope that just then addresses the issue in terms of the means test and the increase that we did there. In terms of legal aid refused, specifically on the civil side, the three main areas we would refuse is matters that are excluded from legal aid. So in terms of the regulations, it sets out the matters that are either covered, matters that are not covered, that are excluded, or matters where we will assist but with certain limitations, like in maintenance matters and domestic violence matters, there are certain limitations because of the issues of quantities. And then obviously means tests where they exceeded beyond what we were able to assist in, and then merits in civil cases. Criminal cases, we don't look at merits. You're entitled to legal representation as of right, irrespective of what we may think of merits. Civil matters, we consider merits very carefully in that to spend taxpayers' money on unmeritorious cases would not be a good use of expenditure and therefore would exclude others from assistance. So we do the merit assessment and very carefully as to what will be a reasonable prospect of success on cases. Sheriffs, and maybe I must deal with the sheriff's issues. We have engaged at National Treasury with the Department of Justice, the Minister's Office, the Sheriff's Board, where we've looked at the issue relating to sheriffs. It didn't get to a stage that was being resolved, which was prejudicing our civil clients specifically, because when you want to initiate any civil process, you have to use a sheriff of the district to be able to serve the process. National Treasury understood our issue. And the difficulty was is we can't enforce sheriffs that are appointed. So we have asked that the process of appointment, that the issue of CSD be added as a criteria and requirement in terms of the legislation for sheriffs to be appointed. It's currently not a requirement. That's the difficulty you have, and so therefore the legislation will have to be amended to put that as a requirement that you must be registered on CSD. Sheriffs generally don't get work from legal aid. Most of their work will come from private practitioners. And therefore, when you say we're going to register on CSD, we have about 50% around the country that are on and are registered, but it's the others that says, well, I get an odd here or there for you, I'm not going to go through that process. And so that's why we put systems into place where we do use them. We are able to say exactly what we use them for and how much was spent on it, and therefore we can give you the exact numbers, and we are tracking it. And National Treasury know about it, and we've engaged with them to look at how we can find a solution on the whole issue of sheriffs. How do we define poor and vulnerable? What is meant? Yeah, we've changed to indigent, but I think obviously have defined, for us it's more the issue about what does the constitution require of us. The means test obviously set anyone that's unemployed, doesn't have an income, will be regarded, will be able to qualify for our assistance, subject to that it's within the types of matters that we are authorised to do in terms of the regulations. Vulnerable groups, obviously from us, women, children, persons with disability, mental health care patients, so you will find we do provide separate statistics on those. We've heard recently about 600,000 children with disabilities that are not in school. We've followed up after hearing that statistic that comes from Stats SA. There is already engagement with another service provider, but we're engaging with the National Association for the Physically Disabled to understand how we can support them better for people that are have got physical disabilities. In terms of what's the gap, and I think that's the question, how many people are we missing? Brian gave you the stuff he's done on research, and we've tried to do similar research on a civil perspective, but it's very difficult. We can get general numbers out of it, so we know there's 250,000 new maintenance matters lodged in the courts in a year. There's 250,000 domestic violence requests lodged every year. We can tell you, we know how many matters go through the CCMA, it's about 150,000, and we've got tabled that. How much are we assisting? Well, if you take that total, it could be 2 to 3 million of that we're assisting from a civil perspective, 50,000 within our available capacity. So, you know, those things, it's very difficult though to determine, because that record's not kept at the courts, is how many of the people that are going through courts are going through unrepresented. I can't pull that for you. It's difficult. You would physically have to look at every single court file to research that, to be able to quantify how many are going through the courts unrepresented. So it's difficult to then at this stage quantify, but you can see, we know the numbers going through the courts, we know the numbers we represent, what's the gap? And I think, you know, it's difficult to give you a definitive answer, but we can share the numbers that we have in terms of our research. I think in terms of what I also need to say is the impact of the budget cuts. I think we've got to understand is when we're facing with this issue of budget cuts, and you'll see, you showed the numbers, our number that left was higher than those that we brought back in. It must be on the understanding is at the time, until for the first 9 months of this financial year on which we are reporting, we were expecting a budget cut in the following year when more posts had to go. So you can't justify saying, I'm now going to recruit someone that's going to come in, they'll be in for 6 months, and I'm going to say, sorry, I don't have a position for you, with the principle of last in, first out comes in. So we freeze the posts, and we hold it, and that's why I said to you in terms of, if you look at civil legal aid stats, in the end of quarter three of this year, of this financial year that we're reporting on, I had 3.8% less staff than in the previous financial year. In the fourth quarter, it decreased by 0.4% because we were able to start recruiting now, because we knew for this year that we're in now is we're not going to have those budget cuts. So I think that's the impact of the uncertainty of, are we getting budget cuts or not, because you don't want an impact on people's lives. And I think that's the concern for us, because this is about people and their lives and their employment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for that response. Members, is there any follow-up before we conclude?
Yes, I had a follow-up, Chair. The last speaker took that away. I was going there.
Sure.
Yes, our CFO.
Is there still somebody who is responding? Okay. Then we'll go to follow up.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I'll be quick. In terms of the number of offices that we lease, we've got 64 justices, 64 local offices, satellite offices, 6 provinces, and the national office. In total, it's 135 offices. Of those 135, we own 7 buildings. One is in the process of being transferred into our name, the Port Elizabeth one. And then we have 3 offices where we are leasing from the court, the Bulukwane office, Mel Spray, and Michelle Slay. We're operating from there, which then leaves us with 124 offices that we are leasing. So it's quite a substantial number. So on average, annually we go out on tender to get for 25 offices because our leases are over a 5-year period. And it is through these that we will find, especially in the deep rural, where some of the vendors which were previously CSD or TEP compliant are now not TEP compliant. And in order to ensure the continuity of service delivery, we will then continue with the lease that will then also impact on irregular expenditure. Then in terms of the use of buildings, especially those that belonging to government that have been used, we have tried to obtain or use those buildings. We have engaged public works where, you know, upon investigation, those were referred to public works, but we have not been really fortunate. But we will continue to try that. And then for irregular expenditure, we had 7 million, which then went to 10 million, but the 10 million includes the 7 million. So in actual fact, the new was 3. We, in terms of our target, just like fraud, it's 0 tolerance. Irregular, even fruitless, we don't target to incur any. But indicated mainly it's caused by the office leases and the shares, but it did not increase year on year. It's just that the 10 million includes that yet, which we have requested for confirmation. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. We will now do the follow-up quickly. Honourable Janke and then Honourable Wong.
No, my name is Chair. Then we're saying those that have not been responded to, we can get written responses to. And so then I'm happy.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'm still just looking at somebody to send a complainant to. I hope it's not an indication that there's no system.
So, obviously, they can normally do to the head of the office, which is natural. They can also do to the head of the provincial office. The contact details are all in the back of the annual report, but what we've done is also now the call centre. We allow them, they also act then as the able to take complaints. We have got a web page, so where every single call coming into the call centre is recorded. We then place this onto the web page and it's sent to the head of the office and to the head of the province for them then to investigate, respond and deal with the complaint in terms of our web page so that they're able to do that. We've also, as our own initiative, apart from the call centre, also does client satisfaction surveys. And I'm pleased to say, in terms of the results we've got from the call centre phoning clients, and it's a random sample that we use, StatsSA brought out reports in terms of their surveys that they did used to be the crime survey, which now have been adjusted to the governance justice survey, indicated client satisfaction from persons that were assisted by legal aid at 89% as per their report. So it's very good to get that independent confirmation from the StatsSA survey and a research that they did. But then if anyone wants to, we will also then from that, we've now, every 6 months, we will send an SMS to clients with the call centre number saying, do you have a complaint? And if you do, you can call the call centre. In fact, the day before the minister came to answer calls at our call centre, we sent out that SMS to all our clients, so that if there's anything they can call into the call centre. That number is there, 0800 110 110, and they can phone and then log their complaint at the call centre as well. Also, we also have an ethics hotline, but that deals with more unethical practices of our practitioners. So if someone had to say, I want money, they feel that there's procurement, unethical conduct in procurement and those kind of things, they can phone in the ethics hotline, which is then independently managed outside the organisation. And that goes in through our internal audit, and they manage that process from an ethics perspective. So even if they feel there's unethical conduct from a practitioner, they can use the ethics hotline, and that will then, we'll have to independently have that investigated.
Thank you very much. Judge, is there any last points you want to make?
Yes, thank you very much to you and to the members of Parliament who have engaged us. I think it's very important for us to prepare for the next meeting here, what portfolio committee expects of us. But we're grateful, we're really taking the questions very seriously. And we will attend to all of them. And we are not immune from criticism. I think it all helps to build us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge. What's left for us is just to indicate we'll certainly keep the communication line open. We want to say again farewell to Ms. Vedalanka. Have a good race if you're going to have one. but also welcoming Ms. Kola. We're looking forward to engage with you in the next city. I'm sure that you will lead the delegation then. This is a new committee. So whatever colleagues say about the previous first parliament, we forget about that. So we're all starting a fresh year. It's a little bit more engaging. We want to get more involved in this very critical area of access to justice, the poorest of the poor in particular. As you know, the perception, despite the good work we do, that there's no access to justice for the poor, except those who can afford to, in particular in the civil area. They say a person accused of criminal offenses get automatic assistance as opposed to that. But we see the progress in the civil in particular, really more interested in that area. As we move forward. But we will do our best if we can. After next week, we'll be busy with the PRR process. We have some kind of definitive legislative power to engage the Treasury in certain aspects. This was Honorable Janki was making reference to in terms of making out the case. It's the guideline that we will discuss on Tuesday. Thank you very much. It was good meeting all of you. I'm sorry for the time, but we will do with the quarter report. We formally note that report. And if there is any issues, we will then raise it at our next meeting. Is that okay, members, that we deal with it that way? Right?
Yes, Chair. We just wanted the annual report.
Yeah, but the quarter was also due, so we just for formality noted formally. Thank you very much. Thank you. Bye. Members, please direct the whole week, please, Monday to Friday. We'll be busy.
Yeah, you'll be with.